Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you file board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, I want to thank you very much for your little bit of disclaimer there. We appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, just as a quick recap to bring you up to speed from the past few weeks, we have changed our format a bit. I will be presenting on Tuesday nights now, which was normally reserved for PJ. PJ is working back with the team directly, and I am just going to take up this part. So what we're going to focus on these calls is the history of the issues, the state, court decisions that have turned our lives inside and out, and how we can remedy them. So a few weeks back when we started this second cycle, we shared with you how you were born a first-class citizen with your rights and immunities and liberties from the creator of the universe. And then we also learned on that call that there was a second class of citizen that was established, which were the former slaves. Okay, they were given something called civil rights from the Congress. Then we gave you a 30,000 foot view, the big picture, that we just kind of made a global put together on it, so you could see the beginning from the end of it. Then last week we talked about how Congress converts citizens, Union state citizens, into federal citizens or United States citizens. We talked about also last week the origin of the federal citizen. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the state citizens actually being converted into federal citizens, again, picking up where we did the week before last, but going to cover it again, but in a different light. And we also may talk tonight, depending on the time allowed, about American common law, which is the law of the land, versus commercial law. We're going to talk about the difference between the constitutional republic and then the democracy that everyone is talking about. So let's get started with state citizens being converted, how they're being converted into federal citizens, and then we'll possibly open it up for questions then or go to the next one, depending on what time allows. In order for the federal government to tax a citizen of one of the several states outside of or in addition to the apportioned taxes of our Constitution, it had to create some sort of a contractual nexus. This contractual nexus is the Social Security number. In 1935, the federal government instituted Social Security. The Social Security Board then created 10 Social Security districts. The combination of these districts resulted in what we call today federal areas. These federal areas are these districts, and the combination of these districts create a fictional jurisdiction which covered all of the several states much like a clear plastic overlay. This was accomplished in 1940 with what's called the Buck Act. In 1939, the federal government instituted the Public Salary Act of 1939. This act is a municipal law of and for the District of Columbia for taxing all federal employees and those who live and work in any federal area. Now, the government knows it cannot tax the state citizens who live and work outside the territorial jurisdiction of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2 in the Constitution of the United States, also known as the 10 square miles of the District of Columbia, its territories and enclaves. So in 1940, like we said a moment ago, Congress passed the Buck Act, and that has been memorialized at 4 United States Code, Section 105 through 113. In Section 110E, the act authorized any department of the federal government to create a federal area for imposition of the Public Salary Act of 1939. This tax is imposed at 4 U.S.C. Section 111, and the rest of the taxing law is found in the Internal Revenue Code. The Social Security Board had already created a federal area overlay. United States Code Title 4 states as follows at 110E. The term state includes any territory or possession of the United States. Now, this is, I'm going to repeat this because somebody will say, well, you live in the state of Florida, don't you? If you say yes, you're saying that you live in a territory or possession of the United States. The correct answer, if you remember from PJ, is I have no evidence in my possession of having anything to do with the state of Florida or whatever, you know, state you're in. Because it is, by definition, at 110D, David, the territory or possessions of the United States. In 110E, the term federal area means any land or lands, premises held or acquired by or for the United States or any department, establishment, or agency of the United States and in any federal area or any part thereof which is located within the exterior boundaries, the outside boundaries of any state, and it shall be deemed to be a federal area located within such state. Does that sound like gobbledygook? That's because the word state has multiple definitions. So if you realize here, they're talking about exterior boundaries of any state, in that one phrase, that one word state, they're referring to the several states of the Union. But when they say it shall be deemed to be a federal area located within such state, they're talking about federal territory. It just depends which definition is being applied, and they don't tell you. You just have to know it. Under the provisions of Title IV, Section 105, the federal state, also known as the state of, like I said, the state of Florida for me, is imposing an excise tax. That section states in pertinent part, Section 105, state and so forth, taxation affecting federal areas, sales and use tax. But that's only affecting federal areas. Now here in Florida, if you're talking about Florida, the land of the several states of the Union, there is no excise tax, there is no sales tax. But in the federal zone of the state of Florida, there is. There's a tremendous amount that we are initiating and exploring based upon correcting our status. Now we're correcting our status as a people. Now we need to learn how to correct our status of the land. And we're working on that, believe me. In Section A of that same code, it says, no person shall be relieved from the liability of payment of, collection of, or accounting of any sales tax or any use tax levied by any state or any duly constituted taxing authority therein having jurisdiction to levy such tax on the ground that the sales or the use with respect to which such tax is levied occurred in whole or in part within a federal area. And such state or taxing authority shall have no full jurisdiction to levy such a tax by reason of his residing. There's that word residing. We've covered that multiple times. It means you're domiciled in Washington, D.C., but you're living within the, one of the freely several states. Residing within a federal area or receiving income from transactions occurring or services performed in such area. And such state tax or taxing authority shall have full jurisdiction and power to levy and collect such tax in any federal area within such a state to the same extent and with the same effect as though such area was not a federal state. Well, they sure like to get gobbledygook with that, don't they? They're using the same word, but the different definitions of each word. Just like the word United States, the phrase United States, it has three separate definitions. We should know, irrespective of what the tax is called, if its purpose is to produce revenue, it is an income tax or a receipt tax under the Buck Act, 4 U.S.C. sections 105 through 110. We have court cases that address this as well. Humble Oil and Refining Company versus Calvert, 464 Southwest 2nd Edition. That's a 1971 case. And then there's several others. We just don't need to get into it, but that's one right there. For purposes of a further explanation, a federal area can include the Social Security as designated areas designated by the Social Security Administration. Any public housing that has federal funding, a home that has a federal loan, or a Federal Reserve loan, a road that has federal funding, schools and colleges, public or private, that receive directly or indirectly federal funding, and virtually everything that the federal government touches through any type of direct or indirect aid. So reference Springfield versus Kenny, 104 Northeast 2nd. It's a 1951 case. This federal area is attached to anyone who has a Social Security number or any personal contact with the federal or the state government. That is, of course, with the exception of those who have been defrauded through the tenets of an unrevealed contract to accept these compelled benefits, which includes me and perhaps you. Through this mechanism, the federal government usurped the sovereignty of the people, as well as the sovereignty of the several states, by creating federal areas within this authority of Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 in the Constitution for the United States of America, wherein it states, quote, "The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state," end quote. So, from this we know all U.S. citizens, that is, citizens of the District of Columbia, not Union State citizens, all U.S. citizens residing in one of the several states of the Union, they're classified as property and franchisees of the federal government as an individual entity. You've heard that before. That's Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox. Under the Buck Act, 4 U.S.C. sections 105 through 113, the federal government has created a federal area within the boundaries of the several states. And this area is similar to any territory that the federal government acquires through either purchase or conquest or treaty, thereby imposing federal territorial law upon the people in this federal area. And federal territorial law is evidenced by the executive branch's admiralty flag, the gold fringe flag, here it comes, which is, of course, flying in all the schools, all the offices, and all the courtrooms in a given county or state. To enjoy freedom secured by the federal and state constitutions, you must live on the land in one of the states of the union of the several states, and not in any federal area. And nor can you be involved in any activity that makes you subject to federal laws. You cannot have a Social Security number, a resident state driver's license or a motor vehicle registration in your name. A bank account is a federally insured bank or any other known contract implied in fact that would place you in this federal area and thus within the territorial jurisdiction of the municipal laws of Congress. Remember, all acts of Congress are territorial in nature, all of them, and can only apply within the territorial jurisdiction of Congress. Some court cases that support this, American Banana Company versus United Fruit Company, U.S. versus Spellar, and so forth. What's important to understand, you can't move anywhere, you can't walk anywhere without being on presumed federal land or dealing with federal citizenship questions. However, when they come in contact with you, they have to prove, it's their assertion, that you're a federal citizen on federal land. They have to evidence on the record that it's federal land and that you're a federal citizen, and they do not want to do that. So they try to get you to confess. They'll say, well, Mr. Smith, don't you reside at 123 Main Street?
Yeah, I sure do.
Oh, okay, well, we're good. We're good. This applies to you because you assented to being a resident. Your correct reply should have been, I have no evidence in my possession that I have a residency at all. Never mind residency at 123 Main Street. I don't have any evidence of that. Do you? Well, you know, it's not easy to do. Most bankers are federally insured. It may be inconvenient to bank at an institution that's not federally insured. And there are many things that become a little more difficult to do without a Social Security number, a driver's license, or a zip code. But there are remedies, and we cover those on the Monday night call, don't we? There has been created a fictional federal state of Florida within Florida, one of the states of the Union, referencing Howard versus Sinking Fund of Louisville, 344 U.S. 624. Schwartz versus O'Hara TP School District, 100, second edition. And then compare those two court cases with 31 CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations, parts 51.2 and 52.2, which also identify a fictional state within a state. And this fictional state is identified by the use of two-letter abbreviations, like for Florida, it's FL. Arizona is AZ. Anyways, so these being distinguished are being distinguished, though, from the authorized abbreviations of the sovereign states. You know, Pennsylvania is not PA, it's PE, what is it, PENN. And Florida is not FL, it's FLA, and so forth. The fictional states also use zip codes that are within the municipal exclusive legislative jurisdiction of the Congress. And the Pennsylvania Commonwealth is one of the several states. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is also known as PA. But as PA, it's a subdivision of the District of Columbia. And if you accept postal matter sent to PA, as an example, and or with a zip code, the courts now have evidence that you're a federal citizen or a resident. So the use of the zip code is voluntary. Referencing domestic mail service regulations, sections 122.32, the Postal Service cannot discriminate against the non-use of the zip code. Reference the Postal Reorganization Act, section 403. It's also Public Law 91-375. The IRS has adopted the zip code areas as internal revenue districts. Reference the Federal Register, Volume 51, Number 53, Wednesday, March 19, 1986. This is not old, ancient stuff. This is new and current. The acceptance of mail with a zip code versus post without a zip code is a defining division between being a federal citizen or a citizen of one of the freely associated states and union. When you apply for a Social Security number, you're telling the federal government that you are repudiating your state citizenship in order to apply for the benefits of citizenship in the federal nation. Granting a Social Security number is prima facie evidence that no matter what you were doing before, you now have voluntarily entered into a voyage for profit or gain in negotiable instruments in maritime enterprise. And this is the system that has been set up over the years to restrict control and destroy our personal as well as our economic liberties. And our legal system, although it being very complicated to a point where you may not understand how it works, I'm sure not, that is not all done and designed by accident, that it is intentional. So with that having been said, we're at the bottom of the hour, so let's open it up for questions and answers. The key is to press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand, and we can just chat on about this a little bit further. If you're on Freedoms Radio, notice that you have the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side in the middle of your monitor. Just left-click inside of it and type away your comment or question. On the outside, you'll see of that rectangle silhouette, you'll see a place to put your contact information, then hit submit, and it will pop up on my end, and we can do that. So, press star 2, ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to engage in a conversation. Otherwise, we're going to have a real short call tonight, and people are going to get really, really bored with these Tuesday night calls. Go ahead. Anybody? Press star 2. I don't want to drag you out, Michael, from Las Wages. I know that you're going to ask something. Begin talking to me. Well, the first thing that I'll bring up, well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate you. The first thing that I want to bring up is that you can operate. I've operated for nearly 30 years without a Social Security number, without a driver's license, and all that other good stuff. And for the most part, it's been a breeze for me, only because nearly 30 years ago, I went bankrupt. I total lost everything. I was on top of everything, had a couple million dollars in my name, and then lost it all with predatory debt collectors and predatory lenders and IRS and everything else that goes with it. So when I came back, arrangements were created so that I'd never operated directly. The phone I have is not my phone. The place where I sleep at night on paper is not my place. And what I tool around in is not mine to tool around in, and so forth and so on. So, you know, in that way, it's been blessed. I imagine if I had to start cold all over, it would be a more difficult path. But with the things that we teach you on the Monday night and Tuesday night calls, you have choices now that you can make to make changes so you can affect changes and learn how to deal with these people where they need to be dealt with, not just in a defensive posture, but also in an offensive posture. There's this thing called deprivation of rights under color of law. And as soon as we get 100 people together who have made their status corrections, we will be putting together an American common law court and be, you know, doing the proper thing according to the law. You know, that is to say, evidence it will be presented to a grand jury. The grand jury may or may not indict. If they indict, then there's going to be a trial. The offending parties will as well be invited to the trial. Most likely they won't show, so there'll be a trial in absentia. And then once the judgment has been rendered, if the judgment has been rendered against the defendants, then that judgment will be entered into, or asked to be entered into anyways, into the foreign record, foreign court's record, which is the United States record that you're accustomed to looking at when you go to a courthouse. In addition, there are insurance and bonds that can be attacked with this judgment. There's just so much that can come out of it. It's like living in a desert all of our lives and then to be translated to this fertile valley with fresh spring water and you know, two foot thick black soil to grow things in. It's an awesome place. Michael, in Las Wages, how's it going?
It's going. I tested positive for COVID today. Somebody had COVID where I'm working at Marathon, so I'm sure everybody's getting it now. No. It's all
back
good.
We called it the flu.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it's like, but you can't get Tamiflu anymore, and they won't give you ivermectin or hydrochloroquine. because that's something that, that's just something that Trump made up. Problem is, FDA approved, I think it was hydrochloroquine for lactating women a long time ago. Very few medicines are approved by the FDA.
In this society, you can identify as a lactating woman if you want to.
Exactly.
In fact, I just had an email that came in from someplace the other day, or a couple hours ago, rather, that said that some man who was identifying as a woman was ridiculed, as not only as a woman, but as a lesbian, was ridiculed by another woman, and she now faces possible jail time. Imagine that.
Wow.
How screwed up can you get?
Yeah. Anyway,
so do you have a question or a comment?
Well, they had a thing on the radio today talking about the WHO and China, and we're going to do an international treaty with them, which puts the WHO directly in charge over here in the United States. They're turning this over to China. International treaties.
That treaty conflicts with the Constitution. So the only thing they can do is go ahead.
It's seditious and it's treasonous.
Right. Correct.
I was just wondering if anybody
for myself, I'm waiting for Lexington and Concord revisited. That's all I'm waiting on.
Yes. Yes. Well, they want to get all the guns first, so. In
all
fact,
right.
Out
anything
here
else,
in California.
Michael?
That's it.
Well, I appreciate you coming to my rescue. You primed the pump. Now we've got Kent here, so that'll be great.
Well,
Kent,
there you
what
go.
You got to say?
Good evening. You
Good
were just
evening.
Talking about. Thank you. You were just talking about the entering a foreign judgment, and you said if they'll take it, and then you said something about insurance and bonds. Wouldn't you, not to be negative about it, but wouldn't you project that they would not want to enter? I mean, when we look at the filings that we discussed recently, that they won't file this,
right.
They want their legal department to have a month to review the paperwork before they even decide if they'll take it, et cetera, et cetera. Wouldn't it seem reasonable at this time that they would not want those foreign judgments and we would have to find another way to go around that?
Well, of course they're not going to want the foreign judgments. That's still not – there are things that compel the court. There are things that compel the United States to accept the judgment, but they can refuse it. They have nothing – no control over going after somebody's bond. My first question anytime I hear of somebody having an issue with government is – do you have the name of the flesh and blood man or woman that is coming against you? Because that's the flesh and blood man is who you want to charge with deprivation of rights under color of law. You don't charge the agency. Agencies are fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Flesh and blood are not.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge involving thing. We're bringing to bear Bernie's work and PJ's work and John's work and a couple of other people you haven't heard of, Chris Ann and you've heard about GW, bringing all together their work and others. GW is bringing possibly one or two other information providers aboard. I've yet to speak with them, but all the better. We're going to be putting together a very large team, and this team will be working to work within the law and compel the behavior through the law. We all might get killed in the process, but, at 70 years old of age, that's not so frightening anymore.
Oh, that's true. So the follow-up question to that is, when you talk about getting 100 people with the status correction, are you going to limit so that there's some control over how they've done this? That status correction to people who have done it through GW, because obviously there are some people on this call that have employed other methods to get to that point or were in the process of employing other methods at the time this came along?
Everyone, with the exception of one person, Everyone that I've ever talked to, and there's been several, who have gone through other sources, do not have the passport and do not have the pass card from the State Department of the United States. In other words, form without substance, I think is what the phrase is. So you do have other people marketing this, and for whatever price that they're charging, whatever support they're lending, et cetera, with our group, we have a team effort, and we have it being done for you so that you're not making mistakes. When I first looked at the W-8 Ben, when I first looked at the DS-11, in normal reference of most people, I would have answered several questions incorrectly that would have kept me on the federal plantation. So what I suspect is that the majority of the other people offering the service are showing you the forms of it, but you're not actually getting the substance yielded to you. You're not actually getting the State Department passport card or the passport itself. And that's a huge difference. I talked to a gentleman earlier this afternoon has, doing his due diligence, and I encourage everyone to do your due diligence. The bottom line is that you can go with someone else, and you're going to be there. That's your daddy. That's going to be who's going to be holding your hand. And if you have had any issues up to that point with them, getting information from them, being available for conversation or communications right away, that should be a big tell as to what kind of support you're going to have if you get in trouble. And everything that we have in the team effort, if you would, is to keep you out of trouble and keep you out of the place where you don't want to be, and yet at the same time have what you need so that you can walk around as a free man and woman and go from there.
Okay. Thank you. One other thing. Michael and I last week gave you some thoughts when you asked for it about bringing some others on this call that are part of the team, not on a regular basis,
yes,
but just to introduce them. Have you thought any more about that, or is that going to proceed?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I had a conversation with John. John is the lead, if you would, of the team. And he said that when time is available for him, he would be happy to join us and make a presentation to us on whatever it is that he has on his mind at that time. Yes, we're going to do that.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. That's all I have for now.
Yeah, you and Michael had great ideas on that, and we're going to pursue them.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ed from PA, or PENN. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I've got a question in terms of one of my local friends here. He says he became a national through Anna Wrights. Is that her name? I got a.
Well, we call her Anna Von Wrong, but you can call her Anna Von Wrights if you want.
Yeah. Anna Von Reich is more like what she is.
The third or the fourth?
I think she's the third's continuing into the fourth, I think. But they have, I don't know how extensive a network they have, but would they be people that could be worked with locally as we get enough people to establish common law courts? Or
absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah,
that's
well,
my question.
Most people on this call here are familiar with the events that we're all looking for. We're looking for a global currency reset. We're looking for some contracts that are out there, some bond agreements to come to maturity, et cetera, to be negotiated. And when that happens, and, of course, we were talking about this almost 20 years ago. It's been that long. But when it does happen and that funding is available, all of these energies that I've had to keep restrained because there's no don't have the fuel to make them happen, we're going to explode. We're going to be pulling people like you, Ed, into this. I'm going to be at least inviting you because you have a vast knowledge. Michael has a vast knowledge. I haven't known Kent that long, but Kent appears to have a good foundation to knowledge. All of these people who are quasi-paralegals to one degree or another, trained or untrained, but having or self-trained or whatever, not formally, they're all going to be invited to participate because this we do have the opportunity through this vehicle, without a question, to redeem the flesh of people from being federal citizens to being Union State citizens. We need to work on the land as well. And there's a couple of gentlemen that I've been speaking to over the years that I will reconnect with that are all about and have been, you know, claimed to have been successful. And I will be looking into their claims and making validations and validation of their claims of putting land into quiet title. John has put land, has taken land out of the federal zone on multiple occasions. He's working right now with somebody I see here on the call in New York, in that process. So, you know, we're going full steam ahead. We have to look at the individual students that have contracted with the teachers to teach them and assist them to work through their legal matters. Some of them are on the front burner, and those burners are on high. So you don't have time to go into the other things that would like to. So it's just a, you know, if you ever drove a stick shift, you've got to have some coordination. It's not an automatic, and that's what we're dealing with. Anything else, Ed?
No. I'll be happy to work with you all, though.
I know you would. I'd be happy to have you. I've known you forever, and I know your heart. You're a good man. Anyways, let's check Freedom's Radio real quick, see if anybody is there. Nope. Well, they're there, but they're not asking questions. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. We don't want to make this too short of a call, at least another 10, 15 minutes if we can. Otherwise, I'm going to go watch a movie maybe. Hey, Elmer. Good deal.
Hey, Michael.
Yes, sir.
How goes the battle?
Sure, yes, sir. Huh? How goes the battle?
Sure. Yeah. Sure, yes, sir. Yeah. You were talking about the mail and all that and the post office and whatnot. You know, the post office is still there. The Postal Service is just a corporation, but the post office is still there.
Absolutely.
It's real simple to do. And if you, with the post office, that's the mail is paid when you buy a stamp for an envelope. It's paid from post office to post office. Everything after that is free. So when you accept that free benefit and privilege, they claim that they're your owner. And the one way around that in the post office is just use general delivery at the post
right.
office at that community. And that eliminates a whole bunch of that. And
right.
I've done
and
that for
I'm glad
quite
you brought
a while
that up.
Well.
I'm glad you brought that up because part of the W-8 Ben and
yeah.
part of the DS-11.
Yeah.
You're not putting down a quote address end quote.
Right.
You're putting down a
right.
post office location.
Yes.
Anyway,
yep. Post location. Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. So, but I've used that for a long time. You know, and just to avoid the free benefit and privilege from this dandy government.
Correct. Correct.
All righty. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Yeah,
Kent, welcome
you.
Back, Kent.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
I want to ask a question based on what Elmer said. So if that rest
well,
of that
Elmer, is, you're still your microphone's still open, Elmer.
Okay.
Could Elmer possibly give a little more of a description about that? I didn't realize that it was only post office to post office, and the rest of it was considered, i.e., taking a benefit. So if you were sending out a piece of mail to somebody else to their location or street address, so to speak. Are you taking the benefit, or at that point, as you being the center of the mail, or at that point, are they taking the benefit?
They're taking the benefit. You've already, you know, you're paying the debt, and you're mailing it from the post office, so they're taking the free benefit and privilege from the Postal Service or the government. They're taking that free benefit and privilege on their side, not you.
Okay, so you're only taking the benefit and privilege if the mail was going in the opposite way and they were sending something and it got delivered to you.
Correct. That's where you receive the free benefit and privilege.
Right, so the receiver is the one taking the benefit and privilege.
Correct. Okay. So when you send something, if you can send it to general delivery, that puts it back in the post office, and the postmaster and all of that comes back into effect. So we've got there is a ton of freedom in the post office. There is no freedom in the Postal Service. That's part of the slave ownership of this country.
And have
just
you,
like the Internal Revenue Service.
Have you studied some of the other issues with the post office, such as the Postal Union, some of the work that Keith Little has done as to what other parts the post office plays in one's life?
No, I haven't. I have not.
Okay. All right. Thank you for
Go ahead.
No, I was. You weren't done. I didn't understand. I was over talking you. Please continue, Elmer.
No, I say we've done a ton of research into all that, and all the research that we've done, and I personally haven't done a lot of it, but all the research that was done into this, everything was footnoted to where it all came from, so there was no guesswork or any of that, and that's all in that website that I sent you, Michael. And it also talks about freeing up, you know, laying claim to the land. That's in that website as well. So if you want to tune into that and pull a bunch of that up, where these guys out here, we've taken land from the BLM, and by just going and posting it in the legal section and mm-hmm. putting the land on, you know, not giving it a legal description, but giving it the meets and bounds description and taking it from them, actually in California, where everybody said it couldn't be done. And all the BLM had to say was they were just whining, well, you should have notified us. We did. We put it in the legal section. We followed the law. You didn't.
Right. So let me ask you a question. In any of the places that you've ever, spent the night many nights in a row, your post location, if you would. Is there a 4x4 out in the front of by your driveway that has a box on it that red flag that can be lifted up and down, Kent?
Not in mine.
Kent?
No.
Never? No?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, who owns the box?
Well, I believe it's property of post. Post office, even though you allegedly discharged the debt at the store.
the box is owned by the United States,
mm-hmm.
a federal corporation. That's who owns the box.
In fact,
go buy them. Go ahead.
Well, one could argue that between the box and the number on the house, that's enough to do it.
Pry that number off the house and give that back to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Pry that number right off of the house or the street, paint over it, whatever you got to do, because that's all their crap as well.
Could we have that website that you're talking about regarding the post office?
Let me go through it first, Kent. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Go through a bunch of that, Michael, and pull it up. I've got it. I've got most of it printed. I've still got to find that one I was telling you about and get it to you, but because I printed that whole book and all of that out, and it's like 200 pages. So someplace I have it printed, but it's been so long. You know, I've been so busy doing what I do that I just, God, I can't stay focused on everything at once.
Right. So. You're preaching to the choir, Elmer.
Oh, Jesus. These last 2 years have been a nightmare. You can't get anything. You can't accomplish anything. Everybody thinks you're a liar because you promised you'd do something for them. And you can't perform because of this half-assed country.
Yep.
So it's something else. If a guy even, I don't know, I'm about ready to retire, thank God.
So. Well, you'll be welcome here in Florida. We are a free state.
Yeah. Well, Nevada used to be, I don't know, Nevada used to be one of the last vestiges of the United States of America, but, you know, since they have to have all these liberal governors and, you know, this guy we have out here, this Sisolak, he's about the biggest moron there ever was. He just like Joe Bite Me. He's the only true place in the whole world that's perfect is that quarter inch between Joe Bite Me's ears. And in his own mind is the only place that this world's perfect.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
All right. So.
Well, I'll get off here. Let you guys continue.
Thank you, Elmer. Kent, thank you. Ed.
I want to.
Thank you, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say one more. I was going to say one more thing. You were talking about, or it was being spoken about, bringing other groups into this fold. Annabon Rights was mentioned, and there's certainly other assembly-type groups around. I find that if not all of the people in those groups, certainly the ones that are heading up those groups, even though that's kind of contraindicated when you have leaders of an assembly, so to speak, that's the way it seems to be at this point in time, those people are very adversarial to anybody else trying to bring in any thoughts that they may not see as being something that will propound their group. Do you have any thoughts, or have you spent any time thinking about how that might be overcome?
Yes, absolutely. If you go to the website AmericansRestoringAmerica.com, that's something for everybody, if you would. So anyone that wants to use the communications platform there, which I'm not releasing yet, the event has to take place so that I can bring in programmers to polish all the widgets on it and make it fully functional under a stressful load of use. There's something called GrassFire Communications. And what GrassFire Communications does is it enables people to communicate by venue. One, that's first thing. And then secondly, by controlled subjects. There's about 30 specific controlled subjects that are the first line subject, if you would. And then you're able to generate a second line subject line that creates your own unique thread. Okay? So that when somebody on the sending end can send something to a specific venue on one of the 30 master subject lines, and then anybody on the receiving end who says that they want to receive information from that master subject line, they'll get your mail. So all of a sudden now, you're talking to not hundreds, but thousands or tens of thousands of people, you know, with the proper marketing to get the membership to go. Never once mentioning, well, this is the Democrat camp, or this is the Republican camp, or this is the independent camp. Everyone's welcome. If a trans wants to use it for their, you know, purpose of connecting to other trans, it's there for them to use. But what we'll see is that the force, power, and effect of numbers, you know, they want to talk about a democracy. We'll show them what a democracy is. By that, what I mean is that the people utilizing this system will be able to collectively dominate those that are using the system that are unscriptural, if you want to call it, or un-American in their thinking. So that places like San Francisco, well, they may dominate there. That's all right. But for the rest of California, 90% of California is not stupid. 90% of California is not liberal or crazy, et cetera. California is the way it is today, in my opinion, based upon decades and decades and decades of vote fraud that has been committed and designed to bring about a certain effect. Now they got it locked in. Remember, at one time, Ronald Reagan was governor of California. So this communications platform will be utilized by everyone, and the true numbers will come out. Imagine if you wanted to query a single voting precinct, the Fire Station 11 over on Santa Monica Boulevard. I'm making up numbers and stuff here, so don't hold me to anything on this. But Fire Station number 11 on Santa Monica Boulevard has 285 families that vote out of that unique voting Fire Station number 11. So the following day, after the election, in the paper, it says Joe Biden got 180 votes in that fire station, and Trump got 35 votes, and then the other votes were miscellaneous. That's what they published in the newspaper. Biden won. But if you go send an e-blast to everybody in fire station number 11, and they come back with an affidavit signed and sworn to that they voted for Trump, and you're not looking at 15 or 30, we're looking at 225 of the 280 families voted for Trump. You have now 225 pieces of paper, affidavits, swearing to vote for Trump. What will that do to the election process? What happens when you bring your camera crews down there? There's nothing that will stop this from restoring our republic. I firmly believe that a solid 85% of America has their head screwed on straight. It's 15% of America, to one degree or another, doesn't. And there's a hardcore 3 to 5% that are just absolute mental cases. That's my opinion. And I think that the 85% of America will demonstrate, once we have the ability to do our paper ballots, to have things that are done at the voting precinct, and have the software behind it, I think that we'll have that change. Elmer, you got something else on your mind?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Kent, anything
else? I'm good.
No, I would just tell you that what Elmer's talking about with the post office and general delivery is possible about 20, 25 years ago when I was located somewhere else in the country and working with another guy on some of these issues. He had worked with his local post office, which was fairly large in a Midwestern town, and the postmaster had decided, and then after I came along, the postmaster decided to abandon his arguments about general delivery. And what we actually ended up with, we each ended up with a cardboard box in the back of that post office with the name on it for each of us, and we just went there and asked for our mail, and the people that worked in that post office, there was a number of different employees there, were all instructed to turn the mail over, and also if we gave a signed document as to who else could pick up the mail, they were instructed to turn it over to them. And there was apparently a lot of questions by the employees in that post office as to how come these two guys got an actual cardboard box where their mail was delivered and they didn't have to buy a post office box. And basically the postmaster told them to mind their own business and just do what he told them to do. So it can be done. There's no doubt that it can be done.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jennifer has raised her hand. She's going to be the last one to say goodnight to all of us. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Good evening. Well, I don't know if this is on topic, but I would like to know more about this post stuff, like what to write on my letter that's my address. But anyway, I'm calling it actually about I'm trying to get my daughter to at least put her apartments in a trust, just as a first step. And if I use the BitClaim deed documents from the county or the town or whoever, will that interfere with the fact that it's going into a charitable religious trust? What I mean, because it's a totally different jurisdiction, I don't see how
Correct.
They meld together.
Well, they don't. They're in two separate jurisdictions entirely, which is good.
It is good.
In other words, the only time that a charitable religious trust can be pierced is if criminal activity is run through the trust. So, just as a hypothetical, let's just say that this woman somewhere has put her home into a trust or her condominium into a trust, et cetera, a charitable religious trust, and she's running prostitution through it, as an example. Then that's a crime that they can pierce the trust with. But unless there's a crime associated with it, there's nothing that they can do. They can't touch it.
So is
now,
there any
specific...
Oh, go on.
They may attempt to touch it.
Okay.
And that's what you know, the American common law courts will be about. Because long before they react to it, I promise you the American common law courts that will be operating, the Seventh Amendment courts of the United States of America in operation, delivering a foreign judgment against a flesh and blood man or woman that was attempting to violate the peace of that religious trust, they'll be dealt with long before they ever catch up to themselves and follow their own administrative process.
Okay, so she can just fill out the normal that jurisdiction paperwork because that's the deed is actually in that jurisdiction too, and so that would be good. Now there was one more question. What was it?
Let me just intercede real quick. We want John to overlook any overview anything that's before it's filed.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. But the other thing is. She wasn't. I just told her to get it notarized, but not don't file it anywhere. Just hold on to it. I just want her to. She's not willing to do much, so this is like a first step. At least you have something notarized, even if it isn't taken down to the county.
Okay.
And the other thing is, so I have a map of all of New York State. From I think the 1800s that shows every deed, every patent and grant and land patent, and all of Queens does not have a grant or a patent. Does that mean the government still owns that land, and she could never own that land?
I don't know. That's a good question. I know who I'd ask.
I just remember reading somewhere that if there is a grant and you want to have a grant or a patent because that means that the land was sold by the government to someone else. If there isn't one,
right. That
means the government still owns it. So I don't know. How do you find that out?
Well, you've already found that out, that there is no land grant. You've already contacted the Bureau of Land Management, right?
Well, they're very unhelpful and never answer my questions because I think I asked the wrong questions or something. And I've only dealt with my land.
Have you done it in the way of a FOIA?
Yeah, I've done FOIA, and then they just answer, and we don't deal with that or whatever. They've never been helpful. Because New York isn't in the BLM, not the regular BLM. You have to go elsewhere.
Okay. Yeah, don't have an answer for you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know who to ask.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
Yes, ma'am. Ed.
Yeah. Looking for land patents. Did she just say New York and Queens?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's one of the 13, original 13 states. And each
Correct.
Of them have their original patents in their archival offices in their state capital. I have to go down to Harrisburg to get the original patents on my land. I have the original warrants for my end of my county, or if not the whole county, on a CD-ROM. But you won't go to the Bureau of Land Management for the federal government. You'll go to the Archives for Land Management in your state, in New York. And most of those grants then were given to, it started off being the New Netherlands. So it was given through the Queen of the Netherlands, or King, whichever it was, and who later became the King of England as well. But you want to look up, see if you can find where the state's archives offices are for land records.
Oh,
Most
thank you. If you. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. I will look up that. Yeah, thank you.
Welcome.
And thank you, Ed. Appreciate you. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening, and tell your friends about the calls. Remember, Monday and Saturday are the calls that really matter. They're the ones that are going into the actual mechanics of things. So until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.